Test, test, test. Test, test, test. All right, whenever you're ready.
Work it, make it, do it. Makes us all the better, faster, stronger.
That don't kill me. Can only make us stronger.
Since it is the six-month anniversary, since the cancellation of the original issues, etc., and our terminations from LCMS Inc. and KFUO Radio, we decided that we would take this open mic's opportunity to respond to a document called An Issues Etc. Q&A that was put out shortly after the cancellation of Issues Etc. from the Board for Communication Services and its director, David Strand. Before we begin, I don't want anyone to misunderstand what we're doing here. We're simply correcting the record with the truth. People will accuse us of sour grapes. They will accuse us of being disgruntled former employees. I don't know. I've never known two former employees happier to be out from under LCMS Inc. and the mismanagement of KFUO in my life. We're very happy and very happy to move on and leave all of this behind us. But this incident, the cancellation of Issues Etc., left a record. And that record is not entirely true. And so before we move on, we want to correct that record with the truth. And that's all we're doing here in this open mics. So all we're going to do is just go through the document question by question, answer by answer, and respond to some of the questions ourselves and respond to some of the answers that the Board for Communication Services and its director, David Strand, gave to those questions. One thing you'll notice about David Strand's responses to the questions in the Issues Etc. Q&A, and you'll find this in virtually every response, is that when he presents information that is positive about the former Issues Etc., he will immediately qualify it or question it or give some reason why that information is irrelevant. When he presents information that presents Issues Etc. in a negative light, he never qualifies it or questions it or gives any reasons why it should be called into question. So when the information favors Issues Etc., it is cast in a doubtful light. When it speaks against Issues Etc., it's presented as rock-solid information. We posted a link to this document, An Issues Etc. Q&A, at our website so that you can go, in all fairness, and read the questions and the answers given by the Board for Communication Services and David Strand for yourself. The first question, why was Issues Etc. discontinued?
This is David Strand's response, the executive director of the Board for Communication Services of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. The program was discontinued because of fiscal realities and the acute need to cut expenses at KFUO AM and move toward operating the station within the budgets provided by the Synod. Since 2001, the accumulated deficits of the KFUO AM radio ministry exceed $3.5 million, shortfalls the Synod must pay with unbudgeted funds. In the last fiscal year, 2006-2007, the station's deficit was $620,000 beyond the budget allowed for the ministry. The ability of the Synod, which currently is dealing with its own serious financial challenges, to cover such deficits now and in the near future is extremely limited. Though Issues Etc. took up only 18% of KFUO AM's programming week, its expenses after revenues in the last fiscal year, conservatively speaking, were $250,000, more than 40% of the station's total shortfall or need for subsidy.
I guess my basic response here is that it sounds as though Issues Etc. was asked to not only bear the burden of the radio station's shortfall, but was essentially blamed for the majority of the radio station's shortfall here. What is not taken into account, and this phrase, its expenses after revenues in its last fiscal year, is kind of a slippery statement there, because a lot of the things that were revenues were not counted as revenue, like underwriters, church sponsors.
And also Reformation Club members that were within 100-mile radius of St. Louis. The Reformation Club, the Issues Etc. Reformation Club, was our group of monthly or annual donors, our biggest donors, people within a 100-mile radius of St. Louis, even though they wrote their checks out or made their online contributions to Issues Etc., was not directly earmarked for Issues Etc., but for KFUO Radio.
And if you listen on, there's a question directly related to that, in which that entire issue of Reformation Club members within a 100-mile radius of the radio station not being credited to Issues Etc., but to KFUO's general fund, is entirely sidestepped and avoided.
You know, we mentioned in the last open mics that the priority of KFUO management and really the Board for Communication Services Executive Director is the protection, promotion, and preservation of KFUO AM's sister station, the pop classical music station, KFUO FM. You know what's amazing is that it's one big happy family when it benefits KFUO FM, the pop secular classical music station. But when it comes to expenses and it comes to shortfall, it's KFUO AM.
Right. We're not one big happy family when it comes to expenses. We're one big happy family when it comes to revenues. We share revenues, but we don't share losses. And that's a good principle to remember when you're trying to sort out the conjoined twins that are KFUO AM and Classic 99. The second question, nonetheless, couldn't you have canceled some other show?
David Strand responds, there were no other programs to cancel that would have resulted in a meaningful step toward operating within the budget and curtailing the mounting deficits. Every other program on the KFUO AM schedule is hosted either by a volunteer or by people who have extensive other duties at the station. Discontinuing one of these shows would have resulted in minimal savings. Issues, on the other hand, had two dedicated full-time staffers devoted exclusively to issues. This accounts in part for the unusually high cost compared with the other shows of producing issues.
First of all, if we've got to cut something to help save both radio stations' staffs should be in play, if you ask me. For some reason, the response deals only with KFUO AM, its programs, and its various staff. Remember, it's one big happy family, but only when it comes to revenues, not when it comes to expenses. So KFUO AM is essentially singled out here as a loss leader. Now, I don't know about you, Jeff, but when we were at KFUO, I was never, as an employee there, treated as though I had the luxury of devoting myself exclusively to issues, etc.
Well, if David thinks that's true, I urge you to contact KFUO management and say if Jeff and Todd, and that would be Dennis Stortz and or Chuck Rathard, were they devoted exclusively, this is the quote, devoted exclusively to issues, ask them that question.
I had duties as staff pastor, or as I liked to refer to it, token pastor at KFUO, and my duties went far beyond exclusively issues, etc. We were required. In fact, I was once reprimanded for not in being involved in certain general station activities. When the station had general activities, I did KFUO Sundays, dozens and dozens and dozens of them. Many, many weekends, my wife and children did not see me because I traveled extensively for KFUO. Doesn't sound like I was devoted exclusively to issues, etc. Now, David Strand was probably unaware of that, although as the chief manager of the radio station, he probably should have been.
Well, what's interesting, too, is that, you know, we both had the Share-a-thon, the annual pledge drive Share-a-thon, and the rally day. We both were extensively involved in that, both from a production standpoint and from a hosting standpoint. Again,
I did production for the entire radio station, routinely did PSAs, spots, various other things. This exclusively devoted to issues, et cetera, is really false.
I agree with you 100%. Another thing to consider, too, let's look at what it's been replaced, the show's been replaced with. How much money have they saved? Well, they still have a full-time host. They still have a board operator, a part-time board operator, which is the same person we had. Charlie McDonald does a great job there. But now they have a part-time co-host announcer that's part-time. So they've saved a half a salary. But you're talking about, instead of having a full-time producer, full-time host, and a part-time board op, they do have one full-time host, one part-time announcer, and one part-time board op. So they've saved half a salary in benefits on the afternoon show. And should they ever someday wisely hire a full-time staff pastor, which they currently do not have at KFUO AM or FM?
For the first time in KFUO's 84-year history, no staff pastor there under current management.
And should they do that and put that on the afternoon show to co-host with the current full-time announcer, they've saved no money.
How can one know your financial and accounting numbers are correct? The Q&A asks.
Okay, this is David Strand's response to question number three. The numbers are based on the audited financial statements of the Synod and on rational assumptions used in the internal accounting of KFUO AM, assumptions described by the Synod's treasurer as accurate, fair, and very reasonable.
I have no beef with the numbers as they are accounted for in the treasurer's office at LCMS Inc. My beef is not with those numbers. My beef is precisely with the internal accounting of KFUO. And by the way, the management of KFUO, including the Board for Communication Services, are well aware of my concerns about the internal accounting for KFUO as it relates to expenses taken on by the AM side, which really should be borne by the FM side.
And again, if you haven't listened to the previous open mics, which is also posted on the on-demand section at issuesetc.org, we mentioned that the fact that both stations have the same call letters, KFUO management's able to play a shell game with both expenses and revenue at KFUO. And again, since the priority is the protection, preservation, and promotion of KFUO-FM, the pop, secular, classical music station, the shell game is always in favor of KFUO-FM, not the AM Christian station.
Now, this question and its response I find particularly amusing. Why were the Issues Etc. host and producer made responsible for AM's $3.5 million deficit since 2001? Why wasn't management blamed?
Here's David Strand's answer. The host and producer were not blamed for the overall shortfall. All parts of KFUO AM have contributed to the aggregate financial problem, and despite efforts to increase revenue and decrease expenses, the deficits continue. Responsibility for the $3.5 million accumulated deficit over the past 7 years resides with station management and the LCMS Board for Communication Services throughout that period.
Now, I just ask you to pause there for a second, Jeff. I would wonder if the responsibility for the $3.5 million accumulated deficit over the past 7 years resides with station management, why the solution, the direct solution to the deficit, wasn't taken. When the Titanic hits the iceberg, why blame the cruise director and his assistant?
Can you think of any other operation where a $3.5 million shortfall since 2001, the guys at the middle to lower of the totem pole, in my case, if you look at the structure put up, I was literally at the bottom of the totem pole. I think I was like on the even par with the janitor. Why the guys in the middle or the bottom of the totem pole get axed?
No. No reputable organization. And if this is true, if David Strand is sincere saying that responsibility lies with station management, it sounds like he has some unfinished business to take care of as the guy responsible for this. I would also note that he says responsibility lies with KFUO management and the Board for Communication Services. He doesn't include that board's director. Go on.
All right. In fairness to those overseeing the station, however, it should be noted that in recent years, while the station has attempted to raise more revenue and operate more efficiently, it has faced steep increases in its fair share of G&A, general and administrative overhead for Concordia Technologies, general services, human resources and accounting, and fundraising costs allocated by the Senate.
The reason I find the response amusing is it says that KFUO management bears responsibility, and then in the next part of the paragraph it says it doesn't bear responsibility. Whoever is imposing G&A and fundraising costs really bears responsibility. So which is it? Is it the foundation? Is it the treasurer's office that bear responsibility? Or is it KFUO management? This is a confusing response.
I will totally agree with them with the rising fundraising costs allocated by the Synod. And in the next open mics, we plan on doing an entire show on the LCMS Foundation because it is a boondoggle. There's no doubt about that.
Why not make cuts at top-level higher-paid management at KFUO? This is the briefest response in the Q&A, by the way.
And it's laughable. KFUO, this is David Strand. KFUO operates with a lean management structure. Like most radio ministries, there are considerable regulatory, technical, and administrative tasks that must be performed. Many of these tasks require expertise and experience specific to the radio industry.
You can almost hear the beakers bubbling in the background. This is technical stuff. This is rocket science. We need experts to do this. Okay, let's talk about lean management structure. Is it true that the KFUO organization, both FM and AM, operate with a lean management structure compared to, say, any other radio station in the market in St. Louis?
KFUO FM, the pop, secular, classical music station, has a general manager that oversees both stations, a program director, an operations manager, a full-time development / promotions director, an assistant program director, a music director, a traffic director, and a sales manager. And this is for the 18th most listened to radio station in St. Louis. You find another classical music station with that management. What's the word I'm looking
this
for?
This is not a lean management structure.
Exactly, exactly, exactly. And on the AM side, the management's comparable to any other Christian radio station that has a daytime operation. That's just not 24/7.
Just so people understand, there are lots of sister stations out there in radio markets, AM and FM stations that are sister stations. And generally how they're run is one general manager, one program director for both stations, and then any other management would do double duty between both stations because, after all, they got to make money. They got to turn a profit. Otherwise, they go out of business. Not so with the KFUO organization.
Well, you can't do that because the secularists are running KFUO FM. You cannot. You do not want the FM management overseeing the Christian programming. Trust me.
What would happen if the FM, the management that is currently assigned to the FM side, took double duty and actually managed both radio stations? What do you think would happen?
It would be disastrous, and that's all I'll say.
We can say more in another open mics. Besides discontinuing issues, what has KFUO AM management and the BCS done to try and improve the financial situation at the station?
David Strand responds, various cost reduction and revenue increasing efforts have been undertaken in earnest by management and its governing board in recent years. These efforts include the completion of a consultant-led comprehensive operational audit, appointment of a financial oversight committee.
This committee, by the way, is that the one with the 18 recommendations, Jeff?
Yes.
This committee, by the way, issued 18 recommendations for turning things around at KFUO, cost savings and management, tightening up management. Those 18 recommendations were approved by the Board for Communication Services and were given to KFUO management to carry out. A question remains in my mind, how many of those 18 recommendations mandated by the Board for Communication Services to save costs and to trim up the management at KFUO FM and AM have been carried out? When I left, less than half.
And the ones that really would have saved the most amount of money are the ones that they failed to implement.
I should also mention that this financial oversight committee is now defunct. Shortly after the cancellation of issues, et cetera, the financial oversight committee was deemed unnecessary by the Board for Communication Services and apparently its director.
We continue with David Strand's response. Let's see. Contracting of a Christian radio fundraising consultant, completion of a campaign readiness study, appointment of a full-time LCMS Foundation executive as KFUO development director.
She actually worked for both radio stations, and in my time there spent the majority of her time worrying about raising money for Classic 99.
Churchwide promotion of KFUO access via the internet.
That was actually promotion of KFUO FM, Classic 99. AM got some honorable mention in there, and they did turn out a reporter insert that had some stuff on AM programming, but the stuff that went broadly, and this was all before the 2007 convention, most of that was promotion of Classic 99.
Stepped up gift solicitation, exploration of potential operating partners, and major fundraising initiative and events. Other efforts made on the FM side for the good of all of KFUO.
Again, wait a minute. For the good of all of KFUO is, I'm sorry, that's false. It's for the good of Classic 99. Remember, it's one big happy family when it comes to revenues. And when it comes to expenses, it's not one big happy family.
Okay, so other efforts made on the FM side for the good of all of KFUO include the elimination of 3 staff jobs in 2007.
Who got fired?
That's a great question.
Are they counting when the BCS kind of, when they fired the two program directors and then rescinded their decision?
I don't know, but I don't know what 3 staff jobs. I can't think of any. Of
in
full-time jobs in 2007, and then...
Who are they talking about?
I don't know. I have no idea. I have no idea who the 3 people are, but not only that, you've got to ask, have they been replaced? Because the number of people working upstairs, at least when we left, was no less than it was a year earlier. The automation of overnight and significant portions of weekend programming, the revision of sales staff compensation to incentivize performance and increase on-air advertising rates. This concept that they've done everything to try to increase revenue. We had a meeting. When was that meeting? Was it in August of 2007, I think?
Probably.
Over at the International Center. And we gave them all kinds of ideas. All kinds of ideas to increase revenue and decrease spending at KFUO and for issues, etc. And we did this off the cuff, by the way. We didn't know that this was going to, we were going to have these ideas in that meeting. Followed it up with the report.
Whenever we presented ideas about saving costs or increasing revenue, many of those ideas we are now presently implementing with our own independent show to great success. Whenever we presented our ideas to KFUO management and the higher-ups, they would listen. They'd give us the synodical head bob and listen, nodding dutifully, and then essentially told us, now, guys, go back to the kids' table and let the adults solve these problems. They did a great job of solving the problems.
They gave us crayons, too,
yeah,
and a coloring book.
Here's some crayons and a coloring book. Go back to the kids' table and keep quiet. Why can't the Synod transfer money from other ministries or activities to increase KFUO's budget?
Okay, this is another question asked by the Board for Communication Services to its Executive Director, David Strand. There are many important ministry priorities competing for finite Synod funds. It is the role of the Synod's Board of Directors to decide how best to allocate dollars on behalf of all 6,044 congregations and the 2.4 million people in these congregations. KFUO is a media outreach ministry, one of a myriad of outreach programs of the church. Its managers must work with the dollars budgeted to it and any gifts that the radio station can acquire on its own.
Yeah, that's fair enough. That's fair enough. I mean, we do need to emphasize that there are important ministry priorities competing for finite Synod funds. It's quite true. The funds grow more finite as the days pass. How Come Issues, Etc. was the only show that had to ask for money on the air? Now, this response, by the way, folks, listen carefully, because the question is, How Come Issues, Etc. was the only show that had to ask for money on the air? The real question should be, How Come Issues, Etc. was the only one who had to ask for money to support itself on the air? The response is non-responsive.
David Strand states, it was not the only program soliciting funds from listeners. Other hosts on other shows also encourage listeners to contribute to the ministry of KFUO AM. Beyond that, the station regularly runs pre-recorded messages throughout the day encouraging the same thing. Virtually all program hosts with other staffers participate in the station's annual share-a-thon. Further, there are Give Now buttons on the KFUO website and periodically on the Synod's main website for the benefit of all of KFUO.
Again, the question isn't, was everyone asking for money to support KFUO? The question is, How Come Issues, Etc. was the only show that had to raise its own money? And it's quite true that none of the other shows have to account for their own fundraising. Because the big question was, how much money was Issues, Etc. raising? No one ever asked, how much money was the Bible study raising? How much money was the morning show raising? How much money was Tom Baker raising? How much money was Notes of Praise raising? Those questions were never asked. When we asked them, we were told, there's absolutely no way for us to tell. And yet, for some reason, Issues, Etc. still had to account for raising its own money. The question goes unanswered.
Now, remember, in response to question number two, David Strand said, Issues, on the other hand, had two dedicated full-time staffers devoted exclusively to Issues. Then in the answer to this question, virtually all program hosts, along with other staffers, participate in the station's annual share-a-thon. Well, does that include us, or are we, quote, devoted exclusively to Issues?
Next question from the Issues, Etc. Q&A. Was Issues, Etc. credited for all the revenues it brought in?
David Strand's response, yes, all donations specifically earmarked for Issues, including Reformation Club income, were credited to Issues. Beyond that, the program was credited for at least its pro rata share of non-earmarked gifts, and during the past year was credited with a generous proportion of the non-gift revenue to the station. Again, the allocations as part of the accounting practices relating to KFUO AM have been described by the treasurer of the Synod as accurate, fair, and very reasonable.
Let's talk about the Reformation Club. He says, yes, all donations specifically earmarked for Issues, including Reformation Club income, were credited to Issues, etc. It's really unfortunate that David Strand answers this way, because not all Reformation Club revenue was credited to Issues, etc.
And putting the best construction on this, I'm sure David just assumed that all Reformation Club, you know, he might not have been aware of the 100-mile radius of Reformation Club, people specifically earmarked for Issues, etc.
Although, if he's going to cancel the show, he should have been.
Well, I agree. I'm just saying, to put the best construction on it, I don't think he knew. I don't think he's lying here. I just think he just assumed it was all Reformation Club income. Somebody might have told him that. But what I'm saying is, it says all donations specifically earmarked for Issues were credited to Issues. If you were a 100-mile radius and you were part of the Reformation Club, or if you just wrote a check to Issues, etc., and you were within a 100-mile radius of St. Louis, guess what? Wasn't earmarked for Issues, etc.
Did not show up in Issues, etc.'s revenue column, period.
Neither did church sponsors for the Sunday night nationally syndicated show, which was somewhere between $15,000 to $20,000, and about $53,000 of Issues, etc. underwriter revenue, which to this day, I have no idea where it was credited or who it was credited to, but it wasn't on an Issues, etc. revenue line item.
So bottom line, in answer to the question, was Issues credited for all the revenue it brought in? The answer shouldn't be yes, but no. The response continues.
The only Issues-related support that does not figure into the equation are the funds given by congregations directly to radio stations in their locales. These monies do not come into St. Louis, are not part of the KFUO, AM, or National Issues budgets, and are not tracked by the LCMS Foundation or Accounting Department. But we just told you about church sponsors. Again, we'd have local churches. We'd voice commercials for them in Chicago and Detroit and Milwaukee and Minneapolis. You go to a local break, Todd saying, hey, you like what you hear? Why not visit, you know, so-and-so Lutheran church? Yada, yada, yada. And that money was never credited towards Issues, etc.
Or the underwriters.
Or the 100-mile radius of Reformation Club donors. Or not just Reformation Club, which is the major monthly and annual donors, but anybody within a 100-mile radius of St. Louis that wrote a check out to Issues, etc. It was not credited to Issues, etc.
Next question. Why did you cancel Issues, etc. on the eve of its Issues 300 fundraising campaign?
David Strand's response, Issues 300 was not a formal sanctioned fundraising effort being done in cooperation with the LCMS Foundation. Rather, it was an effort by Reverend Wilkin and Mr. Schwartz to raise funds for the syndication of the one-hour Sunday evening broadcast. There were no ads, publicity, direct mail materials, telemarketing strategies, or donor visitations poised to be set in motion by the foundation. There were no projections to suggest that Issues 300 would offer significant help in meeting the fiscal and stewardship responsibilities of reducing and eventually eliminating the large budgetary variances at KFUO.
The truth is, we suggested the Issues, etc. 300 in our report about how to raise money, and it was ignored, so we just did it on our own. And true, the foundation had nothing to do with it. Had they had something to do with it, I guarantee it would not have been able to generate money to support the issues, et cetera, budget, because the foundation had a track record for being incapable of, even with the best ideas, generating revenue.
And again, the Issues, et cetera, 300, which we're implementing here at Lutheran Public Radio now, is to get 300 congregations to donate $1,000 in its mission or advertising budgets. And there's a couple of things. Number one, the foundation wasn't a part of it. Well, the foundation wasn't a part of the $53,000 in underwriting revenue. We did that on our own. The foundation wasn't in charge of the $15,000 to $20,000 in church sponsor revenue. We did it on our own. The foundation resisted for years the Reformation Club to get monthly and annual donors to this program and get premiums in return. They said monthly giving clubs don't work. They resisted this thing. We did these things on our own. All these things were our brainchild. All these things were implemented. The publicity was by us. The foundation was zero help in this total fundraising effort on our own of about $225,000 a year. The foundation had nothing, I mean nothing, to do with it. And just like the Issues, etc. 300, the most success we had raising money was without the LCMS foundations.
So the fact that the foundation had nothing to do with it was really helpful to us.
Look at this. There were no ads, publicity, direct mail materials, telemarketing strategies, or donor visitations poised to be set in motion by the foundation. Well, that's true by the foundation. We had ads running on the air since January through March, both live and recorded ads. We had it on our website. We had a promotional flyer that people could download and take to their elders or what have you. By the way, you can find out how we were promoting the Issues, etc. 300 for months. Go to issuesetcarchive.org, then click mirror of issuesetc.org, and right there on the homepage, you'll find all kinds of information and under the What's New section about the Issues, etc. 300. It's silly. It's just not true that there was nothing place.
This is typical of LCMS Inc. If we're not doing it, it isn't happening. If it wasn't our idea, it doesn't exist. It's typical of the corporate think in LCMS Inc., and especially with respect to the LCMS Foundation. Next question. Why would you discontinue what was easily the most listened to program at KFUO AM?
Here's the answer from David Strand. In terms of broadcast audience, probably the most listened to program on KFUO AM is its Sunday morning worship service. Issues, the most heavily resourced program, got to put that in there. In terms of fundraising and production costs, and airing during the evening drive time slot, had a solid core of listeners. But considerably less expensive programs, such as the Bible Study, also have broadcast audience followings perhaps equal to or at times even exceeding that of Issues. Based on what? What are we basing on? He's admitted that they haven't had any Arbitron ratings going back to since 2005.
Well, he'll admit that in a future response, that KFUOAM stopped keeping track in any reliable way of its listenership. So upon what objective data does David Strand conjecture that the Bible Study had an audience equal to or at times exceeding that of Issues, etc.? Upon what objective data does David Strand conjecture that Issues, etc., had a solid core of listeners? Maybe we had no listeners. How does he know? How can he give this answer without any objective data to back it up? How does he know that KFUO AM has any listeners at all, other than the few that might straggle in occasionally? How does he know that? Because there are no Arbitron data for him to base this response on.
Exactly. And so if you don't have Arbitron data, what are you basing it on? And the next question is going to get to it. The most reliable you have is online live and on-demand downloads of programs at KFUO. But I think you can also make some kind of judgment based on the number of people calling the show, the amount of email response coming into a program. And there's no doubt Issues, etc., won those two areas hands down.
Next question. Why in your posted statements have you cited the low broadcast audience and live streaming numbers of Issues, etc., but said nothing about the show's download figures? This response is a study in evasion.
David Strand's response, owing to several factors, download numbers are not as accurate or reliable as broadcast or streaming statistics. Anomalies such as oddly inconsistent tallies, sometimes large ones, are known to occur in download counts. Moreover, the majority of KFUO AM downloaders receive their programs or audio files via automatic subscription. The automatically transferred files are counted as downloads, whether the recipients actually listen to them or not.
Well, I guess I could respond in this way. The Lutheran Witness sends out thousands upon thousands of bundled editions every month to churches. Now, copies of the Lutheran Witness sent out does not necessarily translate into people reading it. So if it is true that downloads themselves don't translate into listeners, then it's equally true that sending out subscriptions to the Lutheran Witness don't translate into readers.
And I've heard pastors refer to the Lutheran Witness magazine as the dust collection magazine.
We are learning here because we depend so heavily upon our deeply beloved download listeners that David Strand so callously disregards when it comes to KFUO listenership, or chalks up to anomalies, spider bots, or other technicalities out there floating in the World Wide Web. From what we're hearing from our download listeners, when they download, they do listen. Maybe not today, and maybe not tomorrow, but sooner or later, they listen. That's why we love our download listeners.
David continues, that being said, Issues, etc. was the most downloaded program on KFUO AM. In February 2008, LiveStats, the service that counts our AM downloads, credited Issues with 95,594 downloads, an average of 314 a day. The Bible Study got 85,121, an average of 2,935 a day.
Two questions. Why February 2008? Just ask yourself, of all the months where LiveStats were available, why did he choose February? Why not January? Why not March? Why not some dates from 2007. We'd been sending him quarterly reports, I believe, on download statistics for several months. So he could have chosen something other. Just ask yourself the question, why February 2008?
Listen, he's saying we can't rely on these statistics because there's anomalies. Okay, so what you've got to do is find trends. So if I was on the board for communication services, like, why did you pick one month out? Give me the last year of downloads, Mr. Strand, and then you're going to find a trend. Now, if there's an anomaly for Issues, etc., there can be an anomaly that one month, the Bible Study, because I guarantee if you'd done the other 11 months, issues, etc., wins hands down, it's at least 90% of the downloads
at KFUO.org. At least 90% from the data that we saw. Now, look, it all may be an anomaly, in which case David Strand is actually making the case that you can't rely on any of the data for KFUO, period. Not for the Bible study, not for a law and gospel, not for issues, etc., not for any of the programs during the day. It's all anomalous. We don't know. We can't trust it. There's no sense in even referencing the data. And yet he references it.
David Strand continues, since last October, discounting November, when a sizable anomaly was known to occur, the average count of monthly issues downloads was 113,801, or 3,793 a day. These are good numbers, and KFUO AM is grateful to those who have accessed issues and other AM programs in this way. Of course, providing this downloading service incurs costs for the Synod, including about $30,000 this past year for bandwidth. There are also costs associated with the preparation, storage, and maintenance of the downloadable archives. It might also be pointed out that downloaders don't typically translate into donors, of whom there were 558 individuals and 39 congregations to issues last year. Downloading is a wonderful technology, but a live radio station also needs a strong and growing core of live listeners to sustain itself.
Well, what this demonstrates to me is that David Strand, probably through no fault of his own, simply does not understand how radio translates on the internet. And that radio on the internet is all about on-demand listening and not live listening. Issues, et cetera, had healthy on-demand statistics. It's interesting, though, that I wonder why he was willing to spend $30,000 a year for downloads, the majority of which he considered to be the result of anomalies. That seems like a big waste of money to me, doesn't it? $30,000 a year to store and to make downloads available, while he admits in his first paragraph that most of it was probably, what does he say, that the numbers are inaccurate and are not as accurate or as reliable as broadcast or streaming statistics.
And this comment that we need more live listeners, this is typical Synodocrat top-down mentality. What's wrong with LCMS Inc.? It's not good enough that you listen to what we're doing or read what we're doing. We want to tell you when to listen.
And how.
And how to listen. I mean, that is typical top-down Synodocrat LCMS Inc. mentality. That's what's driving the entire International Center, 1333 South Kirkwood Road. This statement epitomizes much of what's wrong at LCMS Inc. And then I would agree with him that we were not getting enough revenue from our on-demand listeners, and we admitted this. And we pleaded with them to come up with, we need to do, to register people who, you know, in order for them to download the show, and we're working at doing that at LPR. We pleaded with them to make them register so we can get contact information to follow up with mass email or direct mail or phone calls or something to support issues, etc.
We suggested that the KFUO website, in order to maximize the revenue that could be gleaned from online listeners and on-demand listeners, perhaps think about doing a subscription to the website so that they could get some revenue from all of the downloads that we were apparently getting. As far as I know, those suggestions, including the registration suggestion, were ignored.
Like most of our suggestions, we got the quintessential LCMS Inc. bobblehead. Good point.
Thanks, Todd and Jeff. Now, here are your crayons. The kiddie table's right over there. Leave us alone. Next question. KFUO AM paid $66,000 last year to syndicate Sunday night issues on a dozen or so Bot and Salem radio stations. Does the station also pay to syndicate such short-form programs as By the Way, Front Porch Parroting, The Meyer Minute, Portals of Prayer, and Today's Verse?
David Strand said, outside of production costs, such as putting the material on CDs and mailing the CDs, KFUO AM pays nothing for the syndicated airing of these programs on more than 600 stations across the country. Participating stations play them for free.
Okay, let's make a comparison between the other short-form programs. By the Way, I think that runs about 90 seconds. Front Porch Parenting, maybe 90 seconds. The Meyer Minute, I think it's a little over a minute. Portals of Prayer, probably 90 seconds. And Today's Verse, probably another 90-second program. Issues, Etc. was a two-hour live call-in radio program. All these are pre-recorded. Issues, Etc. was live. This is comparing apples and oranges. In a rather egregious, and I think, duplicitous way.
Well, not only that, this statement on more than 600 stations across the country, ask David Strand to confirm this 600. I know for a fact what you have is, and we had this with Sunday Night Issues, etc. People at Karen Tate Billy, they don't tell you they canceled. You got a new program director. They don't say stop sending the CD. They're sending CDs out to 600 radio stations.
That doesn't translate into it being played on the air.
Yeah, and tell them we want to know times and dates of each one of these stations. And if it is running on these stations and at what time, why don't you print out a list at the KFUO website that tells you all the affiliates, and you know that this is the time. So people in Anchorage, Alaska can tune in for the Meyer Minute, which I wasn't aware was being syndicated, at 9:01 a.m. Monday through Friday.
This is not difficult to do. Every radio station by FCC regulation keeps a log of what it plays. Any program director should be able to tell you whether or not he's playing Front Porch Parenting and when he's playing it and how often during the day he's playing it. So just sending out the CDs to the station doesn't necessarily translate into that station playing it. You need to confirm a few numbers here. It's interesting that Issues Etc. is required to confirm all of its numbers down to a detail, and he can toss out 600 stations nationwide with no verification whatsoever.
This is a dirty little secret. They do not want to do follow-up and find out that the 600 figure, I am certain, is less than half of that, are running these particular programs.
Next question. What was the total listenership of the one-hour broadcast of Sunday night syndicated Issues, etc.?
Here's David Strand's answer. We don't have statistics. If the stations were paid to syndicate Issues on Sunday nights, subscribe to a rating service, we are not privy to their numbers. We do know that Sunday night between 9 and 10 is not an especially desirable or popular time to be on the radio, which is one reason why this time was chosen. It was relatively inexpensive. Listeners to the first hour were always encouraged to listen to the second hour on the internet. However, in analyzing the listener traffic, we found that the second hour of Sunday Night Issues, available only on the internet, had a peak number of online listeners of 39 in February.
Why February?
In fact, we don't even know if these 39 streamers were listening to Issues. When it comes to our numbers, questions.
No,
the peak number of 39 was the highest number of streamers for any KFUO AM show on any Sunday in February.
Why February? And isn't it interesting? He just said that the more reliable statistics come from live and streaming audio. And then when he gets to our 39 number, he says, we don't even know if they were listening. I mean, maybe they had the stream turned on and they'd fallen asleep. That's possible. That really is possible. Maybe the people who are listening right now to KFUO AM or Classic 99 on their live stream, check those numbers. Those numbers are readily available through live stats. Anyone can call KFUO and ask for the live stats for AM and FM, but maybe those people have turned on the stream and fallen asleep too.
But here's the reality. With Sunday Night Issues, etc., we didn't expect a large people listening to the second hour of the show. Think about this. Why am I going to stay up Sunday night? I listen to the first hour from 9 to 10 in Chicago on WYLL. I know that the second hour is going to be available for download first thing Monday morning before I head to work. Why am I going to stay up from 10 to 11 by my radio and listen to that when I can download the thing on demand and listen to what I want to listen to when I want to listen to it? But again, Sonatocrat mentality, top down. You need to listen when and how we tell you to listen. Now, bear in mind that we never did the second hour of the Sunday night Issues, etc., that was syndicated on over 100 radio stations during the first hour, Sunday night. We never did that because there's going to be a large live listening audience on the web to that show. We did that because the volume of phone calls was so high that we simply couldn't respond to the number of people calling in with questions or comments to the nationally syndicated edition of the show. So that's why we did the second hour. Now, David didn't know this, but since the show began syndication on Reformation Sunday of 1995, not one executive director of the Board for Communication Services ever came in and watched the only long-form live syndicated radio show produced by the Board for Communication Services, nor was anyone in KFUO management were they ever present for a live Sunday night nationally syndicated edition of Issues, etc. With one exception, when we broadcast live from the lobby of the Hilton at the LCMS convention in July of 2007, they were in the crowd for that single broadcast.
Next question. Why were the Issues, etc. archives initially removed from the KFUO AM website when the show was discontinued?
Here's David Strand. Once the decision to discontinue issues had become public, modifications had to be made to the KFUO AM website to reflect the changes in the programming schedule and to remove references and links to the discontinued program. It is standard radio practice to remove all references and recorded material, even something as minor, for example, as pre-recorded public service announcements involving personalities no longer with the station. Many things had to happen quickly on the afternoon of March 18th to make the necessary changes to the programming schedule on the AM website and to remove references and links to issues, etc. After removing issues from the lineup and website, an initial consideration was to possibly keep the archives off the site, recognizing that many archives were available on the internet in transcripts on CDs and elsewhere, and that there would be a cost saving on the bandwidth fees. However, noting the demand for the archives after the cancellation of the program,
we had no listeners. Remember, we had no live, and those on-demand listeners weren't necessarily listening. They probably downloaded it and then just deleted it from their computer immediately. And those live listeners that we did have, they opened the live stream and then they fell asleep.
I thought they were all anomalies, the on-demand listeners.
Yeah, I know. Maybe all the demands for the archives after the cancellation were also anomalies. Could have been.
However, noting the demand for the archives after the cancellation of the program, station management restored the archives as soon as possible the next day. When the archives were restored on March 19th, the high volume of downloading caused the KFUO website to freeze, crash several times.
I just don't understand this. Because our on-demand listeners weren't really listeners, and the live listeners were not listening either. And after all, on-demand listeners don't count. I mean, they need live listeners. And yet, for some reason, they were crashing the KFUO website.
Of course, the archives were not available during the times when the website was frozen. As a means of dealing with the crashes and the slowness of audio file transfers owing to web traffic, load problems, and the apparent use of download accelerators, which heavily taxed the bandwidth capabilities, the issues archives were placed on a dedicated server to try to speed up the transfers and avoid crashes. LCMS technology staff has been attending to these matters all along to make the situation as workable as possible.
You know what I'd like to know, Jeff? Someone should call KFUO and ask about their web traffic right now, their on-demand traffic, and just ask what proportion of your on-demand downloads today, September 18th, 2008, what percentage of those downloads are the issues, etc., on-demand audio that's still at the KFUO website?
Well, I think it would be prudent for our listeners to email David Strand, david.strand@lcms.org.
He seems to have extensive technical knowledge here.
And I would say, give me June, July, August. So let's accept his presupposition that there were all these people because it was taken down and they were worried it was going to be out, so there was this mad craze going on. So let's leave out June, July, August. Give us the live listening stats for KFUO AM and FM and the on-demand downloads for KFUO in June, July, August, 3-month period. What shows are the most listened to, and has the live listenership increased, like comparing our show to the new program, the afternoon show? Have the live? Give us this information. Look, folks, they work for you. You deserve this information.
And this information isn't secret. If they tell you we don't have it, they do. David Strand obviously has access to this information. I mean, he's citing this information.
So, david.strand@lcms.org and ask for live listening statistics at KFUO AM and FM and on-demand downloads for the months of June, July, and August.
Next question. In giving the reasons for the show's discontinuation, why was the language changed in the original posted statement from programmatic and business reasons to programmatic and stewardship reasons?
Here's David Strand. Though there is nothing wrong with the word business, and though the church engages in business affairs on a necessary basis, the word can have negative associations in some people's minds, particularly in the milieu of the church and its ministries. Stewardship implies much the same thing as business, fiscal responsibility in managing one's resources without the potential negative connotations.
Did that answer the question? He's essentially saying some people didn't like the word business, so we changed it to stewardship. All right, fair enough. That's a solid PR move, if you ask me.
No, good PR would have been proactive, not reactive.
That's true.
But what do I know?
They wouldn't have had to change their answer so many times. Next question. So, what were the programmatic reasons? Interesting answer.
David Strand responds, for 84 years, the key focus of LCMS Radio Ministry via KFUO AM has been gospel outreach. Unquestionably, Issues Etc., like all of our shows, benefit both our members and reach some unchurched people, as validated by recent testimonials. Broadcast Sunday morning services provide worship opportunities for the homebound and others. Programs such as Law and Gospel and the Bible Study serve to enrich our members as well as spread the gospel to those who are unchurched. The responsible management question is whether similar or greater ministry can be achieved with this media ministry at a more affordable cost than that incurred by Issues, etc.
That just doesn't answer the question. I mean, normally in radio, when you say programmatic, you're talking about the program. What's on the program? If you would play something for programmatic reasons, you're talking about the content of the program versus the new content of the new program. So this is non-responsive. This is just, we all wanted to spread the gospel, and we're hoping we could spread the gospel in a similar or greater ministry at a more affordable cost than that incurred by Issues, etc. This really actually raises the question. It's now been 6 months, six full months. These are radio professionals who are running KFUO AM and FM. These are experienced people sitting on the Board for Communication Services, and David Strand seems to have extensive knowledge of radio and the internet. 6 months after the cancellation of Issues, etc., what's in its place at KFUO AM? And is it in fact, and people can judge for themselves, is it in fact a similar or greater ministry at a more affordable cost than that incurred by Issues, etc.? The question that people probably should be asking is, if the afternoon show isn't the permanent replacement for Issues, etc., 6 months after the cancellation of Issues, etc., then when is the new program coming? Are they working on it? Are they planning it? What will it be like? When will it debut? So that we can make a fair evaluation to see if David Strand has actually done his job. Next question. Why were the Issues, etc. broadcast audience numbers cited in the LCMS org statement so outdated?
David Strand's answer is explained in the statement published on the Synod's website. For years, the broadcast ratings for Issues and all of their KFUO AM shows were predictably low and static. Sometimes the station did not register enough listeners to even show up on the chart. In 2005, station managers, even then in cost savings mode, saw no justification in continuing to pay for reports that never told them anything new. This was 3 years ago. Since then, there is no sign that Issues or any other AM show has significantly climbed the charts in the St. Louis market. The shows, by the way, there's no significant evidence that anything on KFUO FM has significantly climbed the charts in the St. Louis market.
Classic 99 is a commercial station that does not have numbers sufficient to warrant subscribing to Arbitron.
The shows are essentially the same now as they were then. Since 2005, gifts to Issues have stayed on the same plateau, not an indication of a growing broadcast audience.
So he is arguing from a complete lack of data. He admits that Arbitron was canceled. They canceled the Arbitron rating system in 2005, and yet he goes on boldly to argue that the audience hasn't grown, even though he admits he has no objective data upon which to make that statement. It's amazing.
Well, and David Strand has admitted he seldom listened to our show, right? If he listened to the show, we have made a lot of improvements to the show since 2005.
If he listened to the show.
Right. We tried to make it faster pace. We tried to get more pop music, bump music. We implemented, and this was at a great suggestion of Chuck Ratha, the AM program director. It became audio intensive. It improved dramatically. I would say from production standpoint, it sounded equivalent to anything syndicated on secular talk radio.
But if you're not listening to it, if you're sitting over at the International Center and you're not listening to it, you don't know that.
Plus, we started bringing on guests that we disagreed with, which we didn't do before. We started bringing on Bishop John Shelby Swong and Robert Schuller since 2000, and Joyce Meyer and Tim LaHaye and people like that. So there's been programming changes since 2005. However, you have to tune in on your commute home from LCMS Inc. to be aware of that.
Someone should probably ask David whether or not he was listening to the station he oversaw. Or I should say he was listening to the AM station that he had responsibility for.
And this thing, since 2005, gifts to Issues have stayed on the same plateau. Well, our Reformation Club almost doubled from 2005 to 2008.
That doesn't count.
Underwriters went from, I think we had one in 2005 to five in 2008.
But that doesn't count.
That doesn't count.
Church sponsors, by the way, I think that number grew too.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't count, of course. Next question. Why completely cancel Issues, etc.? Why not just cancel the Sunday night syndicated version of it?
David Strand says, the Sunday night syndication cost $66,000 in the last fiscal year, were a fraction of the total program expense for Issues. The savings gained would have been insufficient to reach the deep cost reduction target required.
I seem to remember a meeting where Sunday night Issues, etc., the general consensus of those sitting around the table, including the treasurer of Senate, including David Strand, including several people who were at the time sitting on the Financial Oversight Committee, the general consensus was that the nationally syndicated edition of Issues, etc., was in the black.
But it was the most, I mean, it was the most expensive, but it was in the black. It was the most expensive of all the, you know, if we're producing five shows a week and four of them are on KFUO AM just locally, and mm-hmm. one of them Sunday night on about 100, or weekly on about 100 stations, it was the most expensive, but it also brought in the most revenue.
All right, next question. Why did you discontinue Issues, et cetera, and terminate Reverend Wilkin and Mr. Schwarz during Holy Week?
David Strand responds, in retrospect, one can only regret the timing of the cancellation. Although there is never a good day to lose one's job, any time close to a major church festival before or after certainly may be perceived as a worse time. In this case, if we had waited until early April, we would have been obligated to pay another $5,500 in monthly Sunday night syndication fees. But again, in retrospect, such savings pale in comparison to the valid point that Holy Week was not the best time to effect this decision.
He's talking about payments made on a monthly basis for airtime and satellite costs. Now, these payments are made a month. Now, these payments are based upon a contract that is signed. And these contracts all have what's called a 30-day out clause. Explain that, Jeff.
It's 30-day. You're right. You send in a 30-day written notice of cancellation by either party. And from 30 days, you can stop airing the show or they can stop airing you. It's effective the date you write the letter.
So it's not tied to the 1st of the month or the 15th of the month or the 12th of the month or any particular date of the month. Any day of the month. Any day of the month, you can write your affiliate or your satellite company and say, we're canceling the show. And you're still obligated to pay for the next 30 days. That's the stipulation of the contract. So he wasn't avoiding a $5,500 payment, was he?
KFUO paid the $5,500.
They did. They, in fact, went ahead and paid the $5,500.
They paid the $5,500. It's a 30-day written notice of cancellation. If they waited to April 1st, it was irrelevant. This is obfuscation. KFUO paid the $5,500 in the cancellation. It didn't matter. Not only that, when we were fired, we had an interview scheduled for Easter Sunday night with Dr. Jeff Gibbs.
That day, we were going to pre-record the Sunday night Easter program with Dr. Gibbs.
We would have not said anything about the show being canceled. We would not. We just wanted to do a show on Easter Sunday. Okay? And we were supposed to record it with Dr. Jeff Gibbs on the resurrection of Christ according to the Gospel of Matthew that afternoon. Instead of doing a live show Sunday, we were going to tape it. KFUO paid for it. But we were denied to do a show on Easter Sunday night on 100 radio stations, in spite of the fact that KFUO paid the $5,500 to its affiliate and its satellite company. Now, you tell me where priorities are. Yeah, this waiting to April, of all the statements, this one irritates me as much as any of them because, again, in David's defense, he might not have been aware of this. He might have been told this by somebody in KFUO management. I don't know. But this is blatantly false. Blatantly false. Oh, and by the way, I have copies of each and every one of these contracts with these radio stations in my briefcase.
The hurry to cancel us so that it had to take place during Holy Week probably had more to do with the proximity of the next Board for Communication Services meeting, in my opinion. It gave the process enough time to get all sewn up, severances to be signed, and all of those kind of things to be done before the Board for Communication Services met the next time. Bear in mind that David Strand canceled Issues, et cetera, and terminated us without informing the Board for Communication Services. He did inform the board's chairman, but he did not inform the membership of that board. So on Tuesday, March 18th, no one on the Board for Communication Services was aware that this show was being canceled except for the board's chairman. And the Board for Communication Services members that did not know that day found out the same way everyone else found out. That is, through the grapevine. So I think the proximity of the board meeting, so that David could walk in and say, I canceled Issues, et cetera, I terminated Wilkin and Schwarz, but all the severances have been signed and it's all sewn up, probably has more to do with the date of the cancellation, in my opinion. Next question. Does the church have a special responsibility to care for displaced employees?
Answer. The Synod's policy and approach to displaced employees is rooted in Christian care and concern and may involve severance, health care, outplacement services, and letters of recommendation. More precise details of the expression of such care must remain confidential under the terms of the Synod's human resources policies.
I think that's fair enough. I will add here, though, that, and I still have it, by the way, a diploma of vocation. They usually call it a call from the Board for Communication Services. Now, apparently, when you get a call to Synod, you're still an at-will employee. But it doesn't explain why the board that called me wasn't informed before that call was rescinded. Next question. In the planning of future programming, what use will be made of the comments in the issues petition, that online petition with 7,600 plus signatures, and all of the messages received regarding the value of issues content?
Here's David Strand in the words of a statement adopted unanimously by the Board for Communication Services on April 18th. The board recognizes the value of issues, etc., to the Synod for nearly 15 years and is seeking ways to develop more cost-effective, engaging Lutheran apologetic programming for broad distribution. Comments gleaned from correspondence received since the discontinuation have been and will continue to be taken to heart.
I just got to say, Jeff, most of the comments were bring issues, etc. back on that petition. I mean, the vast majority of them amounted to bring issues, etc. back, reinstate issues, etc. Those don't seem to be particularly helpful comments if you're trying to develop more cost-effective, engaging Lutheran apologetic programming for broad distribution that isn't issues, et cetera.
Well, I'm confused. Was this revised? This meeting took place, I think, on April 17th and 18th by the Board for Communication Services. This was David's answers. I assume these were David's direct answers to these questions at that meeting, right?
Sure.
And his answer is the statement adopted by the BCS at this very meeting?
You mean he's citing in the meeting a statement made in the meeting? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, this doesn't make sense. In the words of a statement adopted unanimously by the Board for Communication Services on April 18th, well, this is the meeting that they're at. So
maybe he's got a time machine.
I don't know.
Traveled forward in time, read the meeting minutes, scribbled them down, and then gave them his response to the board's questions. I mean, this wasn't modified after the meeting. Were these amended and corrected after the meeting? Next question. Did the treasurer of Synod express his opinion that issues, etc., should be the program to be canceled in order to prevent a deficit?
David Strand states, no, he did not express any opinion on the cancellation of issues, etc., or any other program on KFUO AM. However, the treasurer has an abiding interest in all LCMS boards and commissions operating within their budgets, including the BCS. The executive director of the BCS is charged with the responsibility to manage and operate the Synod's broadcast facilities in an efficient and fiscally responsible manner and to make every effort to maintain a balanced budget.
The fact of the matter is the treasurer of Synod wasn't even informed about the cancellation of issues, etc., before it took place. So he didn't have an opportunity to express an opinion on whether or not issues, etc., should be the entity canceled or not, because he didn't know that there were plans to do so.
And I would encourage our listeners to email Tom Kuchta, the treasurer of Synod, tom.kuchta, K-U-C-H-T-A, at lcms.org, and say, was issues, etc., the primary problem for the fiscal deficit at KFUO-AM? And just get the treasurer of the Synod's response.
And look at the question again, Jeff, that issues, etc., should be canceled in order to prevent a deficit. Has that, in fact, taken place? With the cancellation of issues, et cetera, did it prevent a deficit at KFUO-AM?
Well, time will tell that. I think what's interesting, he says the executive director of the BCS is charged with the responsibility to manage and operate the Synod's broadcast facilities in an efficient and fiscally responsible manner. My question is, David Strand is making a lot more money than you and me, maybe your salary and mine combined. The executive director of the BCS, how much money has David Strand revenue brought in to the Board for Communication Services? How much has he justified his salary? Because we can tell you $225,000 of our own that we brought in, which far exceeded our salaries and benefits.
At least he finally accepts responsibility for the fiscal debacle that is KFUO AM and FM in this paragraph. Or at least he says he's charged with that responsibility. So if you want to know, $3.5 million over the last 7 years and $620,000 last year alone, who should bear the responsibility, or at least who's charged with the responsibility for that deficit? David Strand has given his answer right there. Next question. Why has there been such a shroud of secrecy surrounding the decision to discontinue Issues, etc.? Cue the mysterious music.
We would respectfully disagree that there has been any secrecy about the reasons for the cancellation. We do acknowledge that there are limitations based on LCMS human resource policies concerning disclosure of facts relating to the termination of employees. This sounds like this was written. We're supposed to believe these were the questions asked by the Board for Communication Services, and these were David Strand's answers. Nobody talks like this.
This is what I want to know. What I want to know is, and you're right, I mean, if these are the answers given in the meeting and not answers later amended and cleaned up and approved, which they may well be, we don't know. But what I want to know is, it seems to me that that LCMS Inc.'s Human Resources Department certainly can't disclose any confidential information about the termination of an employee, but they also have an obligation to avoid the appearance that someone's being terminated for reasons of wrongdoing, malfeasance, or immorality. I mean, after all, there were a fair number of people who asked, are you guys gay? Wilkin, did you have an affair? Have you guys been stealing money? They assumed because there was silence that we were terminated for cause. Now, after the cancellation, they did say, well, we commend them for their work, and there were programming and business reasons. But in none of their statements did they explicitly say these guys were fired for these reasons and not because of any immorality or any malfeasance on their part. Shortly after the cancellation, we had a conversation with the head of a large radio network, Christian radio network, and he simply assumed that we had been canceled for some kind of immorality or malfeasance, because that's, you fire the staff pastor and the host of a nationally syndicated radio program who is a pastor giving the sparest of reasons, and people assume there must have been some sort of immorality, some sort of malfeasance on their part for them to get fired. Wouldn't you think if you're following corporate protocols, you would think ahead that you canceled a clergyman who is the host of a nationally syndicated radio program?
And the only full-time pastor on staff at KFUO.
When you fire him, you should have a reason ready in advance.
Well, again, going back to our...
To avoid people speculating as to whether or not he committed adultery, stole money, or was fooling around with the receptionist.
And don't forget, going back to the open mic segment we had earlier, which you can see at our on-demand page, issuesetc.org, I had a meeting with Dennis Stortz, general manager of both stations, offered him, don't pay our salaries, don't pay our benefits, we'll take over the contracts for Sunday night issues, etc., we'll take over the satellite fees, we take over everything independently, we just keep the 3-6 time slot at KFUO. It was completely rejected. There can be no relationship between KFUO and Issues, etc. after September 2007, a direct quote from Dennis Stortz, the general manager of KFUO AM and KFUO FM. But this was just a budgetary thing.
Right.
Now think of this. See, what they don't understand, the outrage is that, why weren't we told that there was this fiscal problem? Why weren't we asked to step up to the plate? Why was it just immediately canceled? Why didn't you give them 2-week notice to just say, hey, it's been fun, you know, we're moving on?
Let me tell you what did happen. We were told that the show was canceled and that our positions were terminated. We were asked to turn in our keys. When we asked whether or not we could go back to our offices to get our stuff, we were told, no, you cannot return to KFUO. Can we go back and finish up the unfinished business of recording an interview with Jeff Gibbs for the Sunday Night National show, the Easter show? No, there is no show. And as far as I know, the order not to return to KFUO is still in force. We were told we could not go back to KFUO, not to pick up our stuff, not to answer our phone messages, not to do anything, not to record the show we had scheduled. Now, Jeff and I spent a fair number of weeks after the termination wondering whether or not we'd done something that warranted being fired. We honestly would call each other several times a day and say, can you think of anything that we may have done that would have warranted this?
That we could not go back to our employment for a decade, more than a decade in my case, going back to 93, I believe. It's almost 15 years. I mean, what in the world? I mean, what did we do?
Again, I think I've said this before. My brother, who works in business, says the only reason you put someone's stuff in a box, hand it to him and say, you need to leave the building now, is when they've stolen money. That's the only reason you fire someone like this. My brother said when you fire someone for budgetary reasons, you throw them a going away party because it isn't their fault. You don't hand them a box of their stuff and say, turn in your keys and leave the building.
By the way, if anybody thinks we're making this stuff up about you can't go back to KFUO, turn in your keys, we do have a recording of the entire meeting. I'll continue here. The decision was made and publicly announced. A subsequent statement said with good reason that detailed reasons are not usually provided when making program changes and that we intend to continue our policy and procedure not to publicly discuss specific personnel matters. Even so, in that same statement, a number of specific reasons were given for the cancellation of the show. Employment matters at the LCMS are overseen by the Synod's Human Resources Department. This department prohibits comments on such matters for the privacy and protection of all parties during the requisite transition period.
I mean, in saying that there's no shroud of secrecy, we would respectfully disagree that there has been any secrecy. Then he goes on to explain why they've had to keep it secret. Next question. Shouldn't Reverend Wilkin and Mr. Schwarz have been given some kind of advance warning or notice?
David Strand, it is important to remember the sequence of activities. This was not a personnel decision that resulted in the cancellation. Rather, the show was canceled, resulting in the staff reductions. As such, this was not a situation calling for warnings, probation, or anything about issues that could be changed. The decision was based on economic realities. In accordance with the internal Synod policies, once these decisions are made by the program unit, the Synod's Human Resources Department becomes responsible for managing the employee exit process. Following LCMS Human Resources practice, no advance notice of termination was recommended. Indeed, such notice is generally not helpful to the terminated employees and negatively affect morale for other employees.
How's the morale at KFUO now?
Good question. Human Resources recommend that the terminations be effective immediately and that Reverend Wilkin and Mr. Schwarz be offered severance packages, as they reportedly acknowledge the terminations were handled in sincere Christian fashion. Beyond this, the ongoing financial struggles of KFUO AM have been well known among the staff. Really? Did you know we were losing $3.5 million since 2001?
No.
If people knew it, the underlings like Wilkin and Schwarz certainly didn't know
it. Who were held responsible for it?
The station's accumulated deficits have grown precipitously in recent years, reaching into the millions of dollars. People who work for an organization facing financial difficulty realize that continued employment in such circumstances can be precarious.
Yes, it's an ironic statement coming from the heart of LCMS, Inc. They should post this on the wall at the International Center. People who work for an organization facing financial difficulty realize that continued employment in such circumstances can be precarious. They should post that as a sign on the front door of the International Center.
How much, I ask you, if we're going to be consistent, then David Strand should have to raise his own money and his own, should not be relying on subsidies from LCMS Inc. Let's practice what you preach here. How much money have you brought in to the Board for Communication Services? And on its own, not subsidies given by LCMS Inc., can you honestly say the Board for Communication Services is in the black?
But I'll say quite honestly, had we been given 2 weeks' notice, which is kind of the way you normally terminate people, had we been given 2 weeks' notice and told, go back to work for 2 weeks, wrap up all your business, tie up all your loose strings, we would have done it. And you know what? Had they done it this way, given everyone advance warning, had they told us, you guys have 2 weeks, finish it up, say goodbye to your audience, tell them why you're being terminated, you just can't support the radio program anymore, and we'll give you a chance to transition out, we would have cooperated. I would have cooperated. Would you have cooperated?
Absolutely.
I absolutely would have cooperated. We were never given that opportunity. And I say again, it would have blunted the response, the negative response to the cancellation, significantly. Question, why did the cancellation of Issues, etc., and termination of two men have to create such controversy?
David Strand, the termination was neither motivated by nor designed to create controversy, and controversy was not inevitable. On March 18th, the Executive Director of Communications and the Executive Director of Human Resources met with Reverend Wilkin and Mr. Schwarz and told them that Issues was being discontinued and that their positions were being terminated. The gentlemen were told that there were a number of factors that led to the decision.
I asked repeatedly why the show was being canceled and why we were being terminated, and I was told that we were not going to be given reasons, that this was not the time or the place to discuss this.
Again, we have an MP3 recording of this entire meeting on March 18th. They received a letter from the Human Resources Executive Director that discussed the basis for the decision generally. They were offered the opportunity to converse in more detail on the reasons for the termination with either the HR executive director or the executive director of communications, or both, at a future time of their choosing. The meeting ended with prayers by both Reverend Wilkin and David Strand.
It pains me to say this, but we were never offered an opportunity to converse in more detail on the reasons for the termination with either the HR executive director or the executive director of communications, or both, at a future time.
We were told that this is not the time or the place. That's the extent of what we were told.
Right. We were told repeatedly that we were not going to be given a reason for the cancellation. We were not going to be given a reason for our terminations. I asked a number of questions. Is it this? Is it that? And the answers were, I'm not going to discuss this. We're not going to discuss this. We were never positively offered in any shape, matter, or form an opportunity to come back and meet with them and have things explained to us. That statement is patently false.
Shortly after the cancellation of the program, keeping within the restrictions of Synod, HR Policies, the Executive Director of Communications, posted a statement on the KFUO AM website regarding the reasons for the decision. Later, after receiving numerous inquiries from fans of issues
that apparently didn't exist before this,
we only had 35 of them listening live on Sundays, he posted an updated statement on the LCMS website with more detail concerning the fiscal reasons behind the decision. Sadly and unfortunately for the church, some critics of the decision attacked the public statements and used the situation to criticize the synod more broadly, far beyond the matter of issues, etc., making public comments highly critical of the synod president, the Ablaze outreach initiative, and the unity of the synod generally. Such actions were far beyond any reasonable anticipation of reaction to the decision.
When you fire two guys during Holy Week with no explanation and cancel a popular show, you're going to get some blowback.
I don't understand the question. What does that have to do with, why did the cancellation and the termination of the two men have to create such controversy?
Well, he's blaming the critics. This is typical passive-aggressive evasive. He's blaming the people who are unhappy with the cancellation. We didn't mean to cause a controversy. It was those people who reacted to the cancellation. The cancellation didn't have to be controversial if no one would have reacted. If people wouldn't have complained, there wouldn't have been a controversy. I think that's that response in a nutshell. Final question. Wasn't the real reason for canceling issues, etc., its theological stance?
David Strand responds, the answer is absolutely not. As all public statements previously made on this topic have said, and as the responses in this document demonstrate, the decision to cancel issues, etc., was based on financial exigency. The show had a voice that resonated with people in the LCMS and some outside the LCMS.
Some.
One hopes this voice can continue to be heard through other communication channels. Again, we offered a pay-free opportunity.
We offered to take the show independent, give it to KFUO free as an affiliate, assume all of the costs ourselves. We offered this to the general manager of KFUO a year before we were canceled, and we were told
there can be no relationship between issues, etc., and KFUO past September of 2007, because that's when all the new boards were going to be in place for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
I think it's safe to assume that what is being heard on KFUO now is the programming that he once heard on KFUO now. And I think that takes you a long way toward answering the question, was the theological stance of issues, etc., part of the reason for canceling it?
This statement, the show had a voice that resonated with people in the LCMS and some outside the LCMS. First of all, they would have never added "and some outside the LCMS" had it not been the online petition where they saw all these non-Lutherans saying, I'm not a Lutheran, but I love the show. You guys are crazy for canceling it. The synodocrats that couldn't stand our show. And believe me, we have people over there too. We were frequently criticized by executive directors and high-level employees routinely at LCMS Inc. It was a thorn in their side. One of the biggest myths was, well, they're just preaching to the choir. That meant that we weren't doing evangelism.
The only people listening to issues, etc., are a small kind of crazy group of ultra-conservatives, ultra-Orthodox, who feed off that kind of vitriol and hate speech. We've heard all of these statements. And yet, when the response came in from the petition, suddenly it's not just this small group of people, this hardened cadre of ultra-conservatives who fed off of issues, etc. It was people outside. It was people who'd come to the faith by listening to the program, come to the Lutheran Church by listening to the program. So they could hardly, in honesty, continue to uphold the myth that it only resonated with some people inside the LCMS. I want to ask this question. What is being produced out of LCMS Inc. today, right now, the Lutheran Witness? Does that have an audience outside the LCMS?
The Reporter.
An audience outside church workers in the LCMS, a much smaller group? The pamphlets, the three-ring binders, the three-color glossy whatnots that are being produced constantly at great expense from every department of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod? Are those reaching people outside the LCMS? That stuff being produced for people inside the LCMS. Even if Issues Etc. only appealed to people inside the LCMS, it would have been doing no worse than any other agency in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
And you look at all the other agencies, entities, whether it's the Lutheran Witness, the Reporter, KFUO-FM, you tell me, give me evidence of one person who's visited and joined an LCMS church as a result of these forms of communication.
Last paragraph.
David Strand says, responsible stewardship of limited resources for KFUO-AM prevented the continuing of Issues Etc. as the broadcast radio program it was designed to be. There is a place for Lutheran apologetics on KFUO-AM, but the business model for Issues was simply too expensive for the budget available and the audience support it received. The business model. Ask him. Send me the business model for Issues Etc. What was the business model for Issues Etc.?
Would you please send us a copy of the business model for Issues Etc. that proved inadequate?
A business model should be like a business plan, like a 3-year. Give us a 3-year plan or a 1-year. Please send that to us. I'm sure you have it documented, the business model.
What did you have currently operating, and what were you planning to operate in the future in order to support Issues Etc.? What were your plans for development? What were your plans for increased audience? What was your plan for expansion? What was your plans for a more efficient use of syndicating dollars? This should all be documented, because he references the business model for Issues Etc. I would love to have seen the business model for Issues Etc. I hosted the show for 10 years, and I never saw the business model for Issues Etc., except for the ideas that Jeff and I came up with and implemented on our own.
So the response of the business model can't be buying airtime on Christian radio stations. It's only $66,000, and that wasn't enough money. Plus, we can bring people in who were in a meeting that David, where everybody seemed to be in agreement that the Sunday night that we paid for airtime syndicated show was in the black.
Now, I need to say this before we close out this edition of Open Mics. We've heard some criticism, and people will certainly criticize us in the future, saying, look, these things that you're saying about LCMS Inc., these things that you're saying in response to these responses about KFUO-FM, Classic 99, it's just sour grapes. You're a disgruntled former employees. This is telling the truth, and the need to respond to half-truth with full truth and to falsehood with the truth, period. That's all this is. Jeff and I have both happily moved on, more happy than you know. But the need to correct the record with the truth, no matter how happy we are to be free from LCMS Inc. and out from under the mismanagement of KFUO, no matter how happy we are, the need remains to correct the record with the truth. The truth needs to be told, and it's really that simple. Next Open Mics, the truth on the secularization of Classic 99 KFUO FM. Anything else?
Nope. All right. I said it better.
All right. Don't act like I told ya. Don't act like I told ya. Baby, you're making it better, faster, stronger. Net, 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 that don't